Welcome to Synthaholics, your weekly shot of Star Trek. A very tired shot of Star Trek. Maybe it should be a coffee espresso shot of Star Trek. This is your host, David Duncan. And with me is Aaron O'Brien and Holly Michelle Vine. We are a lonesome three this week.
Yes, but I am drinking Jameson and not coffee. Just to make it clear.
And just to make it clear, we've had a very, very drunken long weekend, so.
Yes.
Not I.
Oh, man.
Quit lying.
I'm playing catch up.
That's right. You got to catch up. Get all that drinking in before the weekend's up. But
before you run out of quartz.
Yeah. You only got so much time. And if we could put time in a bottle or a crystal.
I have time, crystal.
We might go through the Valley of Shadows.
we might, but then we wouldn't really.
Yeah, maybe not. We have the latest episode of Star Trek Discovery, Through the Valley of Shadows, which is obviously season 2 and episode 12, and aired April 4th, 2019. We only have two
April
more episodes
Fools.
Left.
Oh, I know.
Crazy. Yeah,
two more episodes left before this season wraps up. How are we feeling, guys?
Do you think they're going to wrap it up, or do you think it's going to be a big old cliffhanger?
I think something's going to happen. I think they're going to have some kind of cliffhanger. I just don't know what it will be.
Yeah.
I hope the Discovery blows up.
Oh, jeez.
and then they can name it the Michael Burnham Show for season 3. The Michael Burnham Show. Because the show doesn't care about Discovery or its crew. It just cares about Michael Burnham.
And apparently the 7 red bursts are all about Michael Burnham.
I thought you were going to say the seven red Burnhams.
The seven red Burnhams.
The only 7 orgasms she's had in her entire life.
Oh, no.
It's all about you, Michael. You only get to have fun.
It's all about you, baby. All right. So we have...
Bursting all over the universe.
They're bursting all over the world, all over the universe. And I got to say, I think this episode was a little bit better than what we've seen the last couple episodes. It's much more compelling.
Well, we got more Pike in this episode. More Pike usually means a better episode.
Well, and Pike's such a... obviously a tragic character. So, you know, it's like,
oh man, I've got, I can't wait until we get to talk about that scene because I've got a way to make it so much better.
Oh, okay. Dear Lord. Terrified. Let me get some more Jameson for that.
I know. Poor.
Warn me first.
What are you, did you guys enjoy this episode?
Go ahead, Holly.
You go.
I don't know. I'm just Discovery has been like, I was scared after we heard about the shakeup and that the showrunners got kicked out because I was scared for another uneven season. It has happened as it has been prophesied by just the fact of a writing changeover is never good for a show. I'm just still feeling like this episode was better than the last couple, but it still hasn't like reached the peaks of the first couple episodes of the season that were just so good and so full of promise. We did get a lot of Pike, which was great. Pike is great. But it just still like so much of it just hinges on Michael Burnham. And I'm just like rolling my eyes. It feels like a superhero show. It doesn't feel like a Star Trek show. Because a superhero show, usually like the superhero is like the main character. Everything revolves around the superhero.
Yeah, they focus on the Flash or whoever.
Yeah, it feels like a superhero show. It doesn't feel like Star Trek to me because it's just there's no ensemble. Tilly's fallen to the background. Stamets is falling. Most characters have fallen to the background. I mean, you get them a little bit here and there, but it's all about Michael, and it's so on Star Trek. I mean, even like some people have said, like, oh, later Voyager episodes are all about Seven of Nine. But I'm like, well, they still had other episodes of other characters. You know, I mean, they still had other ones peppered in throughout. Whereas this one, there's no let up. I mean, sure, we had the Arium episode, but still it was all centered on Michael Burnham. Arium even said so. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to deny that. Yeah. I don't know. I hope they refocus and get the Star Trek back feeling more Star Trek next season, because I really want the ensemble. That's all I want, really. I like the long form storytelling. Don't get me wrong. That's fine. Just the way they're doing it is not.
Okay.
How about you, Holly?
That was a long answer if you liked it or not. But.
It's not a yes or no answer for me. It's just there's so many, like, I don't know, qualifications.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I can't say I didn't like it, but the episode I felt itself was a little unremarkable.
Interesting.
But, yeah, I don't know. It was like, I don't know. It was okay. I didn't hate it. But it wasn't anything about it that I was like, oh, I just love that. You know?
Okay. Well, let's get into it, and then we can dig our claws into it, what we thought about it. So we start off in Michael Burnham's quarters, where she's playing one of her messages. She's talking to, she's reading one of, or listening to one of her mother's mission logs when she gets the audiobooks of her mom. Gets a transmission from her mother, Amanda, and basically she's giving her condolences about what happened with her mother. And
she never loved you anyway.
She never loved you like I loved you. But she said, you know, Spock told her, and then at that moment, Spock comes to her quarters and, he says that Pike needs them. So they kind of, say goodbye to Amanda.
It's what the intercom is for.
Yeah, I know. Can't you just call me?
That's what they do most of the time.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But she did just lose her mom, so I guess, you know.
Let her down early. They're easy.
She pulled it off the wall.
Don't announce it to the entire ship that you want Michael to report to the bridge.
I'm not taking calls at this moment.
focusing on my red bird.
So then we go jump to the ready room, and Pike basically says, "Yeah, we found another signal, another red signal, and it's by the planet, killing on planet Borath." And you can see Tyler's like, oh, "Did you say Borath?"
It's out, Lee.
And Tyler is remarkably fine. He's no worse for wear after almost hopefully dying last episode.
Yeah, he's back in full swing. And then he's like, well, I could talk to my ex-wife. I mean, Chancellor Laurel.
My baby mama.
My baby mama. So, it's funny, too, during this meeting, Michael Burnham basically really, how can I put it, very aggressively, just right in front of, like, right in Pike's face, saying, like, this has been a colossal waste of time going after these signals. We need to go after control. I was like, whoa. She's just, and Pike's like, you know.
Why didn't you mention this in the first couple episodes, Michael? Because we didn't know about control until, like, halfway through the season.
Yeah, but it's
it's been a waste of time. You didn't know.
Yeah,
she was acting impulsively on emotion, though. She wasn't acting logically.
I agree with that, but I also think that she might be sort of right, because she's like, we've been just looking in these things. They don't fucking mean anything, and we got to get this control, and we have to, like, you know.
I mean,
get
she
this
could thing. Be right, but her motives were.
Yeah,
now, she wants out of place.
She wants to go after Leland and Section 31 ships, and
she wants revenge because he made her mama run away,
basically.
My mama. So, so they're basically saying, look, we got to go talk to, go to the Borath and make sure that Laurel lets us have safe passage. So, Discovery goes to Borath. And then Burnham goes to Ash Tyler's quarters, He's like, I saw you back there, and I saw something that was kind of snaky about you. Like, was that your Klingon side coming out? And he's like, well, there's something I didn't tell you. I sort of had a kid with Lorel.
Back when I was Volk.
Volk did, yeah. And
I know, but it was funny.
The transition surgery sterilized me.
Yeah, but it was kind of funny, though. So it was like that was finally disclosed to Michael that he's got a son. So, yeah, whatever. And Dave, we got during that point, D7 shows up.
Yeah, I was waiting for Ash to be like, oh, can I go look at the ship I designed, please? Please, can I? I mean, I did design it, right?
I did all the work.
I just think it's funny that they actually built one. And it's like, oh, we killed that guy because he was a fucker. And so we're just going to like, oh, we'll still build the ships anyway. He was a traitor. He didn't build in any exhaust vents that'll just destroy it in one hit. Wait.
Right.
Wait, no. So that's a different sci-fi series, I think.
Lorel shows up on the D7, but just before that, he gets a message on his Palm Pilot, basically saying that Section 31 ship didn't make its check-in. And
I love how their super secret ships always have a check-in for like attendance.
Every 10 minutes.
This is such a secret organization, man.
It's so and secret. And basically, he's like, you know, well. Burnham basically says, you know, no inconsistencies too small right now. And it's like, you know, I'm going to go and try to check it out. And Tyler says, I know I can't stop you, so I'm not going to even try. So,
because it's the Michael Burnham show.
Dude, it is.
Nothing I say matters because I'm Tyler.
Tyler just rolls over.
He might as well.
Yeah.
You got to strap on Michael, take me.
Oh, jeez. Okay. So Lorel comes aboard, and we have a meeting with Lorel, Pike, and Tyler, and they kind of explain the Monastery of Borath, which if you are a longtime fan of Star Trek, you know what Borath is.
It's where Worf went to go sweat and had visions of Kalash.
Yeah, Kalash is, it's their
Klingon
their
Jesus. Policy.
Klingon Jesus. Very good. Thank you.
And Klingon Jesus.
He's Klingon Jesus. And we have it's a monastery down there, and this is obviously where he put his son. And we get in this whole argument right now between Tyler and Lorel about who's going to go down and talk to the monks down there.
And they even start switching in Klingon, so Pike can't hear them argue, but he knows they're arguing because he is right there.
Yes. And then
he's an attentive captain.
Yes. And then he goes, I'll go down.
It would have been great if he would have like interrupted them in Klingon. That would have been fantastic. I would have loved for
that
them.
That would have been good.
I would have loved for them just like look at him like, what?
Yeah. You know, dipshits, I can understand you. We have a universal translator.
It would have been
That's
fantastic.
A really good point.
Yeah.
So.
But I just don't think things through so goodly.
So goodly. Keep on using that word, man. So,
I mean, I got to step to the writer's level.
Yeah. So we do find out that the monastery in Borath is a monastery for followers of Kalas, but it also has rich mines of time crystals there. Of quartz. So you can make your watches.
They're time crystals because quartz.
Yes. And so, Lorel says, yeah, I'll arrange passage. I says, I don't really hold any sway down there. They kind of do their own thing. So, you know, good luck.
A bunch of lonely men by themselves. Send to Culber.
Culber, yeah. So anyways.
Culber and Stamets, it'll be great.
Next thing we have Burno and Saru, and they're walking down the corridor, and she's asking a request to check up on this the Section 31 ship that didn't check in. And Saru's like, yeah, fuck it, whatever.
You're going to do what you want to do anyway, because it's the Michael Burnham show.
Yeah, do whatever you want. And she goes, he was like, oh, that was easier than I thought. And he's like, after I lost my ganglia, I'm much more aggressive, and I don't really worry about things anymore.
I'm pretty chill.
Yeah, so take a shuttle.
He views the world differently.
Yes, he does. He very much does, and which we've marked on before.
Now that I've hit second puberty.
Second puberty.
It's all downhill from here.
Next, we jump down
to... Thank God we have no second puberty.
Oh, man. Could you imagine?
I feel like menopause is like a women's second puberty, but I really...
It is sort of is a... But it's more of a... It's sort of like a winding down, unfortunately, for women. Right. Men just have just droopy dick after a while. So
it's called sack stick.
Oh, is that? It's just
we got to stick them down each pant leg, and they stick to your leg. It's called sack stick.
Are those your kneecaps? No, those are my testicles hanging down. Sorry, they dropped a long time ago. And if you've been to a YMCA with a bunch of older guys, you know what I'm talking about.
Just throw it over your shoulder like a continental soldier.
Exactly. Anyways.
I don't know what you're doing at the gym that allows you to throw your balls over your shoulder, but
well, no, I mean,
I will not be there to watch.
Oh, we're going to film it and just make you watch it. We're going to like get you. Remember how Lorca had his eyes pried open last season? That's what we're going to do to you. Instead of light, we're going to just show you that.
Show you. Old men hanging out in the gym dressing room just because they like to hang out naked for some godforsaken reason. I don't know.
Because like, they don't give a fuck.
They don't care anymore. And they're just like, I am naked. I don't care. And I'll just have a conversation with you and my friends for no apparent reason and make you feel uncomfortable.
Well, they're trying to get back to the days of the Roman bathhouses, like when they were children.
To be fair, when my girlfriends are over and we're like getting ready, I don't care if I'm topless around them.
Yeah, that's nice, but at least you're at home. You're not at the YMCA or wherever.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not at the gym.
Yes, yes. The relaxing of your own home, not in public place.
Yeah. It's kind of weird, but we digress. Down at Borath, Pike beams down and he enters the monastery and
give me some quartz. I'm not leaving until I get my hands on some quartz. We ran out on Earth so many years ago. So many Rolexes.
We made so many fucking watches.
So many Rolexes.
This is a joke, right? The time crystals are not made of quartz.
No, we're just joking.
Okay. I was like, totally did I miss quartz. That? Because,
this is Dave. This is Dave speculating.
Got you. Okay. Well,
quartz is a crystal. It helps keep your watch going. It's a time crystal. My logic is flawless.
Yes. I wish they just gave it. I know in the episode they give a Klingon name, but I wish they call it something other than time crystals.
Yeah, time crystals.
Maybe in Klingon it sounds like quartz.
That's probably the Klingon word for it. They just pronounce it weird because the Klingons' letters are pronounced differently than ours.
Exactly.
That'd be great.
So we get introduced to the albino.
It's Kenneth Mitchell. I mean, Cole. I mean, Coleshaw. I mean.
And we get this is obviously Tyler Valks and Laurel's son, but somehow.
Is it obvious? He was an adult. Well,
I am, what does he say? I am future, present, and past, or I am past, present, and future me. I am this age all of the time. What does he say? That it wasn't really profound, but it was really interesting. Like, they left you here as an infant, and it was, 6 months or 2 months ago? And he's like, I am, what does he say? I don't know. It doesn't matter. If you watched the show, you watched it, and I like the line.
It was definitely interesting, and
we always see the alien children grow up so fast in Star Trek. Maybe they take them all to the quartz planet, and they just grow up real fast in the quartz planet, and then they put them into society.
Put you in the quartz mines where you grow faster.
Yes,
like so, the trees. Like the trees do. So, but he does say at first he kind of like rebuffs. Pike saying, yeah, you're not going to get any crystals. We protect them. You're not going to take them.
It will drive you mad.
And then Pike's like, this is all sentient life. I have to, you can't refuse me. This is, it involves you as well. So
I'm not leaving here until I get the time crystal quartz.
So the albino says, "Go ahead, come on up. We'll take you to the crystal mines." So from there, we jump over to the shuttle bay, and Burnham's getting set up to check out the Section 31 ship, where Spock comes in and he goes, "Hey, you're gonna need some help." And she goes, "I don't need any help from you."
It's the Michael Burnham show.
He doesn't say it so questioningly. He's just like, "You are going to need some help," and he just like gets on, and she's like, "Who the fuck invited you?" And yeah. He's like, "I am coming, whether you like it or not."
I know, and I like the thing where he goes, "You know, I don't need any saving, brother." And he says, "Shall we go, sister," or something like that.
Right,
so,
right.
That was a pretty good back and forth.
Yeah,
but Spock needs something to do since he doesn't have a uniform to wear.
What the fuck is with this uniform? Like, why won't he put him in a uniform? I just don't get it.
Has he been forgiven for his crimes yet, or is it still?
I think he said he did. I think two episodes ago, when Section 31 said, you know, Spock's been, you know, cleared of charges and Discovery's no longer wanted or something like that.
Well, I mean, the Area Map episode, because Cornwell scanned his brain with a lie detector test, and then they discovered that all the things were holograms. So, I mean, I don't know if they said it outright, but I mean, he should be clear. But I don't know. They're not very good at explaining anything that's not for Michael Burnham.
Beard too, so
yeah. I kind of wish he'd go back into his own. I know by the end of like the next episode or two he will see that, but whatever.
Probably.
I'm assuming. So then we're at the mess hall, and we see Jet Reno returns, which is great to see her again.
Jet.
Get her more often. I mean, Jesus Christ, like write her in, because she's a better character than a lot of the other ones.
Well, it's like, it's because they wrote her with actual character, unlike Arium.
She's great. Yeah.
Did you say unlike Arium?
Yeah. We know a whole lot of them.
Right in the nose.
We know so much about Jet Reno. The first 5 minutes we meet her, just when she's talking and doing all that stuff. We know nothing about Arium for 2.5 seasons of the show.
Yeah. Well, they definitely wrote for Jet Reno. So we're having like this weird gameplay between Linus. Linus is the frog character. Yeah,
he's the Saurian. He's always having the brandy.
Yeah, Saurian brandy. Very
sneezing
good.
Sneezing on red shirts.
Yeah.
That's how they're gonna die, if they've got the Linus snot on them.
Yeah, they're having a little game, but then she's talking to Stamets and saying, "You better double down on that espresso, because we have to work on the figuring out time crystals now."
How do you make a watch? Good God.
God damn it. And then we see Culber come in, and you know, all of a sudden Stamets, you know, puppy dog eyes, looking across the mess hall like, "Oh, my man. And she goes, I thought this is over. He moved out. What's going on?" And he's like, "Mind your own business. Leave me alone." And he gets up, and just before he walks away, he kind of looks over at him again. So obviously Stamets is still. It's funny.
And Culper sits down with a weird, like, upside-down squid head thing.
Yeah. Well, you know.
His new boyfriend.
It's his new boyfriend.
He'd be past this by now. Like, what? Past what? He's got issues right now, okay? Leave the fucking PTSD alone.
And you know, maybe Culber just wants to experiment with some squid. You know, that's what he's into for now. So, you know, he came back reformed by spores. You don't know what he's into now.
He doesn't know what he's into now.
He doesn't know what he's into. He's checking it out. He's playing the field.
He did ask Cornwall if he was gay still, so, I mean, who knows?
Am I still gay?
I don't know. That's for you to decide.
What is Cornwell doing right now, anyway?
Not being
on the show.
What is she doing? Is she still on the ship? Yeah, well, she has to be still on the ship.
She's
right?
I think she's the one who notified Discovery about the check-in, the missing check-in.
Well, she took a shuttle to Discovery, so she could have taken a shuttle out at any point in time.
I mean, yeah, maybe she left off screen.
I don't know. I have thoughts, and I'm trying to keep them to myself until I see more. I don't know.
See more butts?
See. Oh, my God.
Actually, who was it that said the Discovery? Thank you, Discovery, for all the butt shots?
That was Jen.
Was it Jen? Okay.
The Klingon Pop Warrior.
I actually saw some butt shots this time, and I noticed them, and I was like, oh, butt shot.
Yeah, if you're not paying attention, you could miss it. But if you are watching, there's a lot of butt shots.
I saw one.
Yeah.
See my butts.
So Stamets kind of walks off out of the mess hallway and that scene. And then we go down the monastery, and then we have Pike and walking with the albino. And he calls himself T'Novik, and he is the son of Nun.
And, I know someone who's the son of Nun. Hmm.
So that's very interesting.
Sounds very familiar.
So he's saying, basically, as they're walking down this corridor, you see somebody, a Klingon, planting something in the hallway with some crystals or something all put together. And you see this tree grows, like, immediately. And it basically says, Pike's saying, like, weird, because, you know, you should be an infant. How could you still be a full grown? He goes, time is different here. And then he turns around and sees the tree growing up. So, and then
he says the thing about being whatever it is that he says.
that thing
that I can't remember.
Doing that thing you do.
he is all points in time or something. So he's just himself. It's weird.
Yeah, he's everywhere in time. And then T'Novik tells Pike, and he says, I hope you're ready to find out what your future could hold for you. Because
one day, Jadzia Dax is going to come with a bunch of Klingons and murder me in my sleep.
Yes, she might. All right, so then we jump back to Burnham and Spock, and they're flying to the Section 31 ship, and they're having heart-to-heart, I guess, as best you could say. And during this time, Spock starts going through what's going on with Burnham, and basically she's saying that I'm not angry, I'm enraged at what's happened to me with my parents and, you know, Section 31 and the time suit and everything. So, and
that means your logic is super faulty.
Which
then.
I thought... You know, you guys always talk about the writing, but I thought that was a good choice of words.
Yeah, that was very good.
For a human child raised by, you know, Vulcans and enraged.
Every clock's right twice a day.
You know what? Your clock is broken. You're only right once a day.
Yes.
Well, there's 24 hours in a day, and there's a clock that's 12. If you don't use a military clock, it's right twice a day.
Yeah, that's your problem. That's your problem, Holly. You're always using military clocks.
My bad.
So, but she says, I'm enraged. And Spock points out that rage is the enemy of logic. And this is where Spock's going into. He believes that that Burnham is the basically common denominator on what's going on with these signals. And she's just... I think Burnham just doesn't care about the signals anymore. She's like, I don't give a fuck.
When he said that, it kind of made me think, well, what if Spock missed something and we all missed something and it's not actually Burnham? But I have no evidence to really play off of that thought. So,
you know, it's hard to figure out, untangle all this.
Such a tangled web.
Well, if it's not Michael somehow, that'll be more surprising than it actually being Michael.
So when they get to the coordinates of the Section 31 ship, when they come in, something bounces off the hull. And
they
then
found a body field.
It's just a bunch of crew members of the Section 31 ship just floating in the ship. I really hate that Section 31 ships are not given names. I'd love to hear the logic behind it. Because I hate saying...
It's a secret.
They're secret.
That's the most secret thing about Section 31.
It's the only thing secret about them. The names of their ships.
Yeah. Well,
They check in with Mommy every 10 minutes just to make sure everything's okay.
So one of the bodies is still alive, and they Spock...
Or is it?
And Burnham beams the person aboard, and it's Lieutenant Grant, Kamir Grant... And he was a tactical officer on the Shinzu. And so when they revive him, he's
immediately assimilates them both.
He basically is like, I found a subroutine that was weird, and I was trying to purge it from the ship, and then it just started, opened all the doors to the ship, and the vacuum sucked everyone out. And
how did you have time to put on a space suit?
I know.
I
climbed into the space suit. Yeah.
It seems like you did that before you were messing with the computer, because it.
You know, before I hit this clear all button, I better put this suit on. So. Oh, jeez. That's funny.
I can't say the C word.
No, you cannot.
And I don't mean the one that's...
that ladies don't like?
Yeah, the one the ladies don't like.
Some ladies don't give a fuck if you say the word cunt.
Oh, wow. Say it. My ears.
Does that offend you?
My freaking ears. No, I'm all right.
No, it doesn't. I just don't want to say it.
Four plus years of this show, Holly. Come on.
I've given his ears a thorough burning, so it's
fine.
Dave's raped my ears for long enough.
So. I believe that.
You're next, but Holly.
It won't let it happen. I was going to say, though, that, like, I think it's just a cultural thing. I think the cultural issue that, like, Americans take with the word cunt is, I don't know, it's weird.
Because Australians say it a lot, and...
And Europeans
say it, too, yeah.
I guess maybe because I watch television that is... from all over the place. I don't know.
And you hear it and you don't think it.
I guess the word is desensitized to the word cunt. Mm-hmm.
You see a show in in America, and they'll have a British guy, and he goes, "Oh, bloody hell," or something like that. But like, bloody hell is like really bad if you said it like in Britain for some reason.
Being a cunt in Britain is like,
you know, it's funny that you're actually saying this, Holly, because it just reminded me of a story that my wife, years ago, this is like when she was in her 20s, there was these British kids that were over visiting, and she was with them, and she kept on calling them little buggers. Mm-hmm. Come here, you little buggers. And buggers mean that you're like butt fucking somebody. And the kids kept on looking at her, looking at their mom, like, what the fuck is this lady saying to me?
That's awesome.
And so into her, she was just like, come here, you little buggers, like that. And it's just a funny story. Anyways,
that's awesome.
So. Well, that's like the same, like the perfect point. Like it, in our cult, in the American culture, it just cunt means vagina, and I don't know why people are so offended by the word vagina or the thought of vagina or penis or dick. I don't know either.
I think we've had this discussion probably before you joined us, but I'm just like, I just don't get bad words. I mean, it's just like, just get over it. I mean, the fact that you give them so much power is what is like making them so bad. Just like, chill out, and then
there
won't be a problem anymore.
Talk about something, the more real it becomes. It's the same with like, racism and gender issues, and like the more you talk about it, the more real it is. And you know, I was raised in a household where that wasn't a thing, and it never occurred to me to be a racist or care that I wasn't represented in the Disney franchise. Like,
you weren't.
I identified with the active males who, you know, like, you know, not Jim Hawkins, but, you know,
Jim
like
Hawkins from Treasure Island.
Yeah, Treasure Planet.
Oh, well, I'm Jim Hawkins.
I mean, I know Treasure Island, yes, but like the Disney movie, we're talking Disney. So, yeah, I loved him. I wanted to be Jim. And I never thought that I was never offended as a little girl that. Well, why are all the boys having all the adventures and the girls are being saved? I never thought that. I was like, damn, I want to be like that guy. Like, that character is awesome. And there were plenty of females that just never occurred to me to be offended.
Yeah.
But and now being offended is our culture.
Well, let's face it, Holly, I think you're made of a different stripe than most girls. Most girls want to be princesses and be saved, where you're like, fuck being saved, I'll figure it out myself.
You're a horse of a different color.
It's funny, because actually I've told Robbie this a couple times, and every time I tell him, he forgets that I tell him. But when my sister and I played, if we played quote-unquote princesses, we fought over who got to be Princess Katana and who got to be Xena, the warrior princess. So, like, nice. We weren't like, oh, I'm Cinderella and I'm Belle. No, we were like, I'm gonna fuck you up. Get your sword. Go get the katanas and we'll fight.
Funny.
Like, yeah, you're right. But anyway, how did we get here?
We talked about cunts.
Yes, we were talking about cunts.
Because Dave said the C word.
Being such a cunt, America.
Yeah, don't be a cunt. Because Dave said the C word in his house, so. But not that cunt, so.
Yes.
Everyone listening to this episode should probably drink every time you hear the word cunt.
I feel like we're breaking the
mold. I think they're going to be dead by the end of this tangent.
Yeah, please don't drink.
Yeah, we'll go back to saying, see you next Tuesday.
Sorry. See you later.
See you next Tuesday.
Make like a tree and get out of here.
What?
Back to the Future reference.
I didn't hear you.
Said but... so make like a tree and get out of here.
Okay.
Except leave, you know, anyways. Yes, where were we? Section 31 ship, everyone blown out the hatches.
You know what? And we should just name that ship the cunt.
The USS cunt.
The USS cunt.
Would it be a USS because it's unclassified, or it's classified and it's not really official?
The NXO cunt.
Yeah, right. Gant, Lieutenant Gant, which was from the Shenzhou, they have a little talk, and basically...
I'm too scared to go back over there. I don't want to get blown out the airlock again, even though I was fully prepared.
I'm fully prepared the first
time.
It
didn't make a lick of sense.
No. Nope.
Well, what was I going to say? So they come to the idea that the ship is sitting there in, like, dormant mode or whatever. Like, it's just not doing anything at the moment. And they're like, what's it doing?
So they're getting a system update from Windows.
Yes, right. And so they're gonna go over, but they need to somehow trap the control program on the ship. And they say we need somebody who knows the Section 31 protocols and how the computers work and everything.
Only we brought Tyler with us.
And Gant said, "Well, you know, I don't want to go aboard again." But then they kind of talk him into it.
We need you. You're the only one that can help us. And even though Spock likes science, he doesn't like Section 31.
Doesn't like it, so they decide to beam aboard there. So then we have a quick scene between Laurel and Tyler, and basically Laurel's like, "I know that you always are going to be in love with Michael Burnham, and there's nothing I can do about it.
My head isn't smooth enough for you anymore, huh?
I can't. I'm just going to have to let you go."
I like Laurel's hair.
Yeah, it's great when Klingons have hair.
Yes, well, and anyways, they just have I don't know what the scene really does other than kind of maybe puts a ending closing mark on their relationship.
You know, you kind of thought they would after she had his decapitated head she threw into some lava, but you know, a couple words here and there, he'll be fine.
Right. And then we go down to Borath with T'Navik and Pike, and they're walking through, and there's this big you shall not pass bridge over some lava, and he says,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
No, I want to know where you're going before I say what I said, because I don't want it to be out of order.
Well, he says this is the pillar of the past, and then this pillar of the present. This is when the future becomes past.
So I loved how each pillar represented the past, the present, and the future. So the past pillar already had a key in it, and it was eroded and crusty, and it was awesome. And then the present pillar, he had to actually put the key in, and then the future was unknown. It was everything was possible. And I just loved how they did that, whether it was the writing or directing or sets. I loved that it was a physical representation of past, present, and future.
It was very cool. And I have to say, pretty much the monastery looked pretty damn good, I think, in my opinion. From the exterior shots to even, I'm sure they was a, it wasn't a set. I think they actually went to a site where they could film maybe an old church or something like that, mm-hmm. you know, so looked really cool. And so as they cross the bridge and he puts the key, like you said, to unlock the future, and they get into,
he was for the present, and then they went to the future.
Yeah, yes. to go into the future, and then they go into a cavern where there's all the time crystals are all coming out, so they're everywhere. And he goes to grab it, and Tanavik's like, can I just tell you something before you go grab that? And he basically says that it's once you lift the veil of the future, he says anticipation and horror could be there. So, and sometimes madness can follow. So you are basically, you don't know what you're up against, and anything could happen. So this is really interesting to me at this point. So Pike says, well, I this is what I'm here for.
But doesn't he say something like, if you, like, he says something about it solidifying his future. Yes.
And let me just, so that's right after this. So Pike touches the crystal, and then he is on the training mission that we've talked about, where one of the floor plates come up and blows up, and he's trying to get all the cadets out, and the explosion disfigures him. And so we see that. And next we see him in a hallway, and he's whole again. But then a wheelchair rolls up, and you just get that classic Pike from the Menagerie Part 1 and 2 in the original series, but they updated it, mm-hmm. and he's coming towards them, and he sees his face, and the face starts screaming at him, I guess, and the face is even like meltier, like Pizza the Hut or something like that.
From Pizza the Hut! It would have been great if it would have beeped before he woke up.
Yeah. Beep, 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 beep. I know, right?
Like, that would have been hilarious. Like, beep. I guess they wanted it to be scary. But if they wanted it to be scary, you could have just kept beeping over and over and over and over again. Like, because that would be kind of menacing.
Yeah, and so Pike, you know, recoils in horror. And so he's freaked out for what he saw, obviously. And that's when he says, Holly, like you were saying, he says, if you take this crystal, this will be solidified.
Right.
And what I thought, not just that's the mission. So if he succeeds in the mission, this will actually happen to you. If you don't succeed, then control will win. And you don't have to worry because you're not going to be around.
Right.
So
it's like early death or disfiguration.
And honestly, it's just one of those things. And then Pike just says to himself, I'm a Starfleet captain. I dedicate my life to service, sacrifice, compassion, love. And
that's why I like Pike.
Oh, Pike is fucking he's great. Awesome.
He's the tits.
Yeah, he is. He is. He's
no, incredible. No. He's the ass.
He's the ass. We gotta respect.
He's the perfect ass.
Oh yeah, because of the butt shots, right?
I wish he was the tits, but he is a dude.
But he's pretty damn good. And then so he goes and he breaks off the crystal. And he even sees shots of himself. He's seeing the explosions when he does that. And Tanavik, you know, says, I honor you for what you've decided to do. So, and his fate is sealed. I got to say, this is probably the best scene in the whole episode.
Absolutely. It's the best scene in the last, like, four or five episodes.
I don't know. I really enjoyed it. So, anyways, this is where I was like, wow, this is good. This is good, good Star Trek. Mm-hmm. So, back aboard the Section 31 ship.
It's a shame he gets disfigured on a Crossfield class ship. Huh.
Yeah, it sucks. Burnham, Spock, and Gant are doing their work, and at some point they say they're going to construct a way to reboot the computer core, but we're going to do it to make it think it's a subroutine that has to happen on the ship. And when that happens, we'll draw Section 31, and we're going to close in a cage kind of thing. So we're going to try to trap it within a certain system so it can't get out.
But
so
that they need to split up. You got to split the party.
Yes, but right at that point, the ship jumps, powers up, and jumps into warp. And they don't know where they're going. So they're flying away. And then we jump scene in sickbay, and we have Jet Reno once again, and she has a hangnail.
I have a hangnail.
and she needs Culber to help him help her. And she says, "I got two problems. I got this hangnail, and I got a guy who's got a coworker who needs to be on his A game." And basically,
you're fucking it up, okay? You're
fucking it up with your drama.
Being such a cunt.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Hanging out with Mr. McSquid cunt face.
And then we have a really funny back and forth between how she, when she was getting married, she lost her partner to during the Klingon War. And basically they went on through all the things of, like, you know, vegan steak and fonts to use on their guest book and, you know, do not playlists from the DJ and stuff like that. So I thought it was really funny, actually, because I've gone through that myself. Not the vegan steak part, but
good God.
Good God. but yeah, so and he says, "Look, you know, I lost my partner. You got a redo, you got a mulligan. Maybe you got a second chance. Don't take it for granted.
You can have butt sex for the first time ever again."
Oh, Jesus.
It's a brand new body to experience it with.
That's why he's friends with this upside down squid head guy.
Yes.
He can stick his whole head up there.
Oh my God. Anyways, we got that scene, and then on Section 31
show. Can I just say, though?
Yes.
I loved Jet Reno in this scene because she was the right amount of manipulative and friend. Like, yes. It was perfect because she came in like, "Oh my God, I'm dying. Well, I have a hang now." Yeah. And he's like, "Okay." And then she's like, "Really serious, really serious, really serious. Quit being such a baby. Suck it up. Blah." And then she just like leaves. And it's just like, that was just the perfect, I don't know. I just love Jet Reno.
Yeah, Jet Reno's great. I hope we get her again, like next season too. You know, I hope she continues. So,
well, if Stamets actually does leave and hang out on freaking Vulcan, like he said he was in the first episode,
maybe she'll take over for him.
Stamets ain't going anywhere.
But let's be honest, we aren't getting a lot of Stamets screen time either. So,
yeah, this is the first time we get like anything reasonable with him in the mess hall there.
Yeah,
right.
So, Section 31 ship, we got. You know, they're racing outside of Federation space, and that's when they talk about how to isolate the program, and they're going to have to do it in separate spots. So Spock's going to have to go to a different area to manually reboot the core. So,
hey, your brother's killing my game. I need a hit on her.
Yes, and so. So back then they're talking about she's as Burnham and Gant are by themselves working. He basically says, you know, I signed up for Section 31 because I'm glutton for punishment, and basically saying the Battle of the Binary Stars is where everything, you know, seemed crazy and filled me full of doubt. So I thought this would be a good fit for me at the time. And then he starts talking about how Section 31 would be perfect because they have control, and control would make all sorts of threats and impossibility. And then you see Michael go, "What did he just say? What I thought he said?" So, and she starts reaching for his phasers or her phaser. And that's when Gant says, if you try to reach that, I can get across here and point like 5 seconds or whatever and crush your hand, basically. So, and this is where Spock realizes that the, they missed the nanotechnology
inside of Gant. Oh no.
It's in Gant. Cause when he's trying to isolate the control program, he finds it's in a carbon based a life form. It's on the bridge. And he's
carbon based like, oh unit.
Carbon based unit. Yes, exactly. And so he tries to call Burnham, but he can't get through. And so he can't open the door. Who can? Raspberry.
He jammed the door too.
So, and Spock has to basically hack open the door. So
Spock's gonna break the door.
Yes, yes. So he's breaking down the door, doing his thing to get through. And then Gant and Burnham have this discussion how Burnham is the most useful tool, basically, because to get the sphere data. I'm not exactly sure how that works out, but that's why Control is trying to get Burnham under control. And so this is where he attacks her and tries to put the nanoparticles into her by stabbing her in the eye.
Why didn't he just do it? Like,
yeah,
in the shuttle when no one was suspecting it, he acts all scared and just stick her with it. Stick her and Spock. I mean, of course, because he can't, because Spock can't die. But it's just like his plan was really dumb.
Yeah, he could have just, you know, poked her when, you know, she wasn't paying attention, and that would be it.
He had so many times where he could have, like, just stuck her with the nanoprobes.
Yeah.
It was just so, like, dumb playing out this big old song and dance to fail.
Right. And so when Spock gets through the door and gets onto the bridge again, he tries to give he rips off Gant's backpack, his oxygen tank or whatever, off his EV suit. But then he tries to nerve pinch him. But Gant says, oh, that would work if I had any nerve endings.
I'm not alive anymore.
I really liked how Spock came to realize what was going on.
Yeah, it was cool. Spock, and how he just sprung into action, you know?
Yeah.
And then he breaks Spock's hand or wrist or arm or something like that when he tries to give him the Vulcan nerve pinch. And this is where Burnham grabs her phaser, start firing at Gant, and just like Leland last episode, just nothing's happening. Just making holes, and it's just closing up. And this is when Spock starts typing on the computer real quick. We don't know what he's doing, but and at the last minute,
I just gotta send an email, Michael. It'll be fine.
Real quick, let me CC you in. He blows a huge hole into Gant's body, and then the nanoparticles just start pouring out of him and start attacking, coming at her, and Burnham's shooting. It's actually a very compelling scene at that moment. And
use the wide beam, Michael. Use the wide beam. Remember the wide beam.
This is where Spock does his little magic, and he magnetizes the floor, and the nanoparticles just turn into a puddle on the ground. So he apologized that I was a little slow trying to figure out the right kind of frequency to electrical current to channel through the floor to immobilize them. And Burnham's like, you were just on time. And Spock says,
I wonder one of those stray shots didn't hit Spock.
I know. So this Spock says that the Control blocked a tricorder, so they wouldn't have been able to identify that was actually, they were, Gant was Control at that point. So they drop the ship out of warp, and Spock's like, don't you want to find out where they're taking us? And
no, the signals are garbage.
Well, and she's like, I don't really want to fall into their plan. So we get there. And then we're back on Discovery.
I love how they just leave the Section 31 ship and just take a shuttle back. Bring the ship with you.
Right?
I know.
Why is everyone so stupid?
So
just let somebody else discover the ship, take over all the technology.
All the secret Section 31 files that probably are under the password 12345 or password.
It'll be fine.
So it's good.
Oh man,
it's all good.
So Spock. You see Spock and Burnham flying the shuttle back to Discovery, and then Pike is in this ready room, and he's talking to Laurel and Tyler, and you can see Pike is distant, like he's still processing what's happening. So, and he basically says that, you know, Stamets and Reno are working to stabilize the crystal and working on that. And then he basically says, I met an albino monk, and his name is Tanavik. And he gave him the insignia of the torchbearer that helped him.
And you are the father.
You are the father. And we have a little scene where
survey says your son's older than you.
Yes. So we have Laurel and Tyler looking down at the torchbearer insignia and saying, oh, that's a good name. We should have called him Tanavik. Yeah. So
hindsight's 2020.
It was. And then...
if it's meant to be.
If it's meant to be, it'll be.
It'll be. Sorry.
So on the bridge, we have Burnham and Spock are back. And Section 31 ship, they tell them what they found on that and what was going on with everything, where all of a sudden we find the Section 31 ships are surrounding Discovery, and they are they're coming to take the sphere data, or what the remnants of what's left for the sphere data to vacuum up. And
it's going from suck to blow.
Suck to blow.
To Megamaid.
Boy, we are all about that Spaceballs references tonight.
Yes. You missed one from before the show, guys, just in case you're wondering.
I can't remember.
Oh, that's right.
Hello, Mahoney. Hello. We did that before the show started.
Yes, that was before us. So Pike wants to do another spore jump and to get the time crystal ready. And Burnham's like, they'll just find us again. What's the point? And she says it's going to take a power of a supernova to basically power the
time crystal anyway.
So we might as well just blow the ship up. And Pike's like, that's not a bad plan.
I don't know if he even thought that's not a bad plan. I think he, at that moment, felt defeated, and the future is going to take its course, or the present is going to take its course, and he's going to get to the same ending anyway. So fuck it. Let's blow up the ship.
Blow up the ship.
Fucking do it.
I have a theory about this later.
Blow up the ship, Picard. No. He says, fuck it, let's blow up the ship. And he tells Bryce to send a message to the Enterprise and say, to come to us, Maximum Warp, and prepare to take on our full crew complement. And then he tells them to start the auto-destruct sequence. And that's where we leave it. That's the end of it. Who wants to go first in discussing the Through the Valley of Shadows?
I want to hear David. David, go first.
Oh, I've been going last lately.
You're going first this time, buddy.
Oh. Well, like I was saying at the beginning, this episode it's definitely better than the last couple. It just falls apart for me in a lot of ways. So focused on Michael, the control nanobots and the guy trying to simulate her the dumbest time. Like, her back was turned when Spock left. He could have gotten her so many different times. It's just like, what? Or walked up behind her nonchalantly. It's
curiosity just, killed the cat, you know.
No, it's just there's no curiosity. Once he assimilates her, he can get all of her knowledge. Like, there's no reason to be curious.
I think that was curiosity. Because why not see how it plays out? It's a learning. The AI is developing. It's a learning thing. And when you're learning, you're curious. I don't know. That's just what I thought.
Well, I mean, if you're curious, assimilator, then you'll know everything you need to know. I mean, it's really that simple.
So basically what you're saying is you belong to the Borg.
I mean, I won't put it past Discovery writers to do a dumb and make them the Borg. They're actually they're almost even more badass than the Borg. Because, I mean, the Borg, they'd take a phaser shot and they'd go down as long as they didn't have their energy shields, but... These guys,
the
nanoprobes,
Borg can't
just build
travel through data and infect you through data.
Yeah,
the Borg have actually attached to you, replace the parts.
Well, the Borg inject nanoprobes through like tubules that they stick out. They, I guess, they're backwards, or he had to like use the. He tried to use her with a syringe, but like the fact that like the nanites just build the body parts back. The Borg weren't even that advanced. Like, these are like almost more advanced than the Borg in some way. So it's just I'm not putting it past Discovery. I mean, I hope they're smart enough not to make this a precursor to the Borg, but I can't give them that because I'm scared that I just don't have the faith in the writers.
I'm scared.
Yeah, I'm scared. I'm also scared for Picard if the writers are of this quality. The Pike stuff was great, but at the same time, it's not really a revelation. We know what happens to Pike. I mean, it's a great scene. It was well done. But, other than seeing the explosion that hurts his face, it wasn't anything new. It just... It didn't add much to the mythos for me. We know what happens to Pike. I mean, all the other stuff we get to see Pike, what kind of person he is throughout Discovery, that's great.
I kind of disagree because I thought it was very dramatic, and I thought it was well acted by Anson Mount.
It was beautiful. I mean, but it didn't. I mean, like as far as the mythos and our understanding of it, it doesn't do anything other than it was a really well performed scene. It was a well done scene, but it didn't. To me, it didn't do much to expand the story because we already know that's what happens to him.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. It didn't do a lot for me. And I was actually speaking with Philip on the Facebook group. We had him on episode 3, I think, for Discovery. Uh-huh. I was speaking with him, and he was reaching out to me and saying that, you know, he says that I kind of bring up sex and nudity and violence for Game of Thrones, and that's why I want it to be more like Game of Thrones. And he's like, the show's more like Game of Thrones, and you realize because it's a long form drama and, you know, with this kind of thing going on. And I'm like, I mean, sure. I mean, it is more like Game of Thrones than I give it credit for, because it is a long form drama, but at the same time, it's trying to be and failing miserably to be Game of Thrones, because Game of Thrones is fewer episodes, have way more characters. We get to know way more of the characters. And in this show, it's just about one character, pretty much. We get, you know, some little spotlights on the other characters here and there, but it's almost always about Michael. And
I have to say, I actually agree with him. I mean, I think that the audience for Game of Thrones is a "we need to please you now" kind of mentality. And with Game of Thrones, yeah, it takes you a long time, but you get so much in one episode, and it's not all about the sex. It's not,
and I wasn't trying to say it was either.
Most of the context that you say it with all your joking, it does come across that way.
I understand why
he'd think that.
Which is why I wanted to bring it up, what he said on the show specifically, and address it in a clear way what my thoughts are.
Yeah, but if I could just interject too, real quick, I always took it as that they're not, you want them to utilize the format of not broadcast television. And when you say sex and violence, that they could just do whatever the fuck they want because it's a streaming service.
Exactly. That was my next point. Exactly. When I say sex, violence, and nudity, I'm saying they're not taking advantage of the platform they're on because they can do anything they want without it, since it's not going to be broadcast on TV.
We did see a decapitated baby head, so that was kind of fucked up.
Yeah, it was. It was. Yeah. And so I mean, like they are pushing a little bit, but just not very much. And when I complain about those things, it's not I want them because of Game of Thrones. I want them because of they're free to do that. They're not on, you know, standard television. You know, they're not on like 7 o'clock at night on a TV channel anyone could pick up with an antenna or regular cable or whatever.
Well, HBO, you know, Game of Thrones isn't. It's definitely confined. There are constraints to time on Game of Thrones.
No, they're not. They vary quite a bit. And this season is coming out. Most of the episodes are supposed to be longer than an hour. So they do vary from time to time on Game of Thrones because they're HBO. They don't have regular commercials. Their shows, because they play movies. Movies are irregular lengths of time. So, I mean, it doesn't matter. They're not really constrained by time either. They're more constrained by budget. Which is why there's going to be less episodes
of Game of Thrones. I've watched every episode of Game of Thrones, so I guess I see it differently for their time frames.
Well, the battle on the wall was a longer than regular episode. I mean, there's a couple that were longer than regular. But I mean, this isn't about Game of Thrones. Basically, because Philip misunderstood, and he's a longtime listener of the show, people who drop in and out of the show and only hear every now and then, I just wanted to kind of throw that out there, let everyone know about our conversation and let them know. It's not the sex and nudity that Game of Thrones that I want because of Game of Thrones. I would love for the intrigue and the characters and all like that be out there like Game of Thrones, but Discovery is just not because it's so focused on one character. If it was deep and you got to know all these characters on such a deep level like in Game of Thrones, it'd be amazing, and I would love that, even without the sex and the violence.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I like Michael Burnham's character, but I want to see more stories based on everyone else too. I think it should be, you know, spin the wheel per episode, and who do we focus on for, you know, this? You know, it gets a little bit like, okay.
I mean, it's getting tedious that the show is just about one character, and you can have one person have the spotlight and still give more room to other people. I mean, I guess Game of Thrones is technically about Jon Snow, but all the other people get tons of screen time too, and we get to know them, we get to care about them. Like, there's no Arium episodes in Game of Thrones. Thank God. You know, it's just, you know, I don't know. It's a different type of storytelling. I mean, they're trying to both do the long form story arc, but just Game of Thrones, the writing is just vastly superior in as far as characterization, and that's what I want. And then when I say sex and nudity, it's exactly what Aaron is saying. I want them to take advantage of not being on network television.
The only pushback I'd give you on that, Dave, is that, you know, Martin, when he wrote Game of Thrones, obviously had years to develop that. So they're taking a well-crafted, you know, book series that he put together, and you know, and they utilized it.
Sure, I mean,
yeah. So we're not getting that with Star Trek Discovery. They're
cobbling this together in like 6 months.
Yeah. So it's I suppose it's a totally different thing. So,
but still, they're not even trying with other characters really. I mean, we get a couple spotlights here and there, but it's just about one character. Like I don't even feel like they're trying to really give us many other characters, because like Tilly's like basically Arium's set dressing now. I mean, we haven't had much from Tilly since her hallucinations.
And I don't know. I agree. Tilly kind of dropped off recently, but we got some pretty big, you know, stories involving her for the first half of the season.
Yeah, but her stories were about bringing Culber back, and I still don't know where that thread's going. That still feels like a waste of time. I mean, like there's so many. They could have had like lots of character moments throughout the series or throughout the season. But they just wasted a lot of time bringing this character back, and I don't know where it's going. They're just like everyone's just kind of pushing them to get back together. Michelle Yeoh was, and now Jet Reno is pushing to get back together. I mean, it's like this other romance story that like it's not serving the larger plot of the show. I don't know. Next episode looks like it'll be a lot better, and the theory I was mentioning earlier right before we finished the recap is that I'm thinking that they might kill Stamets right when Culber starts to have feelings for him again, so it can be he can be a more tragic character, and then they'll really go through it and blow up Discovery, because the writer we didn't really say anything about the news, but the only thing I read is that they're claiming they're going to wrap up why there's no Spore Drive or whatever going forward. And killing Stamets, the only person that can use the Spore Drive, and getting rid of Discovery would be a good way of doing that. Although, they did say in Season 1 that they were building a ton of Crossfield-class ships with the Spore Drive technology, and that was never, ever addressed again. So,
but Culber is made of Spore DNA. He could probably pilot the ship.
Ooh, an excellent way of looking at that.
No, but I'm saying they're going to kill him.
Well, maybe. Yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, that's what I think they're going to do with the end of the season. They'll probably kill Culber in some way, so we can't have anyone else using the ships, and then they'll destroy the Discovery. But like I was saying, like I mean, they were in Season 1. They said they're on the look for more tardigrades, and they were building a bunch of Crossfield class ships with lots of Spore Drives, but that was never ever addressed again. So I mean, there's lots of like lingering plot threads, but since they're claiming they're going to wrap it up. That's my best guess, is that they will really carry through with the destruction of Discovery. They'll rebuild it without a Spore Drive, since Stamets will be dead.
Mm-hmm.
That's my theory going forward. Who wants to go next?
I'll go next if it's all right, Holly.
Yes.
So a couple things. I did like this episode a lot, and I think the Pike scene, seeing himself in the future, was like, that was great. I thought it was really well done. I was very happy with it. And I don't think you get much better television in the making of, you know, whatever, some 50 some years of seeing Pike's character from TOS and then into now, and see how this all materializes, at least as best well told as they can. So besides that, I have a thought about Discovery. I think they might use the time crystal to send Discovery into the future with the data. And that might be the kind of the cliffhanger, is that they're going to be shooting them into the future somehow, or they'll be moving through time.
Oh my God. It will tie into the other thing that Holly keeps saying, Calypso. So they won't, just send it to they'll tell Discovery to stand still, and then it'll just go into the future.
Yeah.
Cause 1,000 years is 50 years after the thing. Huh?
So it might be interesting. Also, we've been reading about the Borg and tie-in to it. Like, this might be a precursor to the Borg. Another way is maybe Control gets the Sphere data, and maybe they send Control back into the past somehow. That's a possibility, too.
Yeah, maybe.
Control is basically the viable, you know, embryo of the Borg to be seen in the future.
Mm. That's possible.
That's a thought, too. So,
especially since,
but how, like, did they get to the Delta Quadrant? That's what I want to know.
Well,
maybe they sport drive it.
When Dr. Burnham planned to go back 10 minutes, she was launched, what, 950 years in the future?
Right.
So maybe the time crystals aren't very accurate, and that's why we're going to see, you know, if they go with Aaron, your theory, then it could be they planned for the future and got the past.
Right. I see, and the next episode looks great because it looks like we have the Enterprise in action as well.
That'll be fantastic.
So it's going to look cool. Finally.
Hopefully we'll get some good screen time with Rebecca Romijn.
So I think what's going to happen – oh, and by the way, I got something to say about the Enterprise too, but I'll get that in a second. They're trying to tie up all the inconsistencies of what Discovery has introduced, you know, into the Trek universe. And trying to figure out how they can fix it or make it make sense. And I think the best way, spore drive has to disappear. I don't see how, unless it becomes super secret, nobody knows what it is, or nobody talks about it anymore. So I think something's got to change a little bit with that. I don't know how that's going to happen, but I think in the next two episodes, the writers really have to play with time to start playing with.
Yeah, well, Stamets is the only one that can use it, so killing Stamets would fix that, and sending the Discovery into the future would sort of fix that, except for all the Crossfield-class ships they said they were building last season.
Right, well, but we don't know, so maybe they don't, when Discovery is out of range, or maybe it goes into the future, or goes to the Delta Quadrant, or wherever it goes, you know. So, I mean, it could be very well that, you know, Control infiltrates Discovery's computer, just take the spore data, starts becoming more and more sentient, and they take Discovery to the Delta Quadrant, and then they shoot into the future or the past or something like that, and that's where they leave.
And if Control turns into the Discovery, like, where does she gain the compassion to let...
Yeah, I don't know.
What's his name go?
The guy, right. I don't know. That's the other thing, is like, how does that play into this season?
Yeah.
So the next two episodes has a lot of heavy lifting to do.
Right.
To tie up a lot of loose ends. And it's possible they could do it. It's possible they could do it. They have basically 2 hours to finish this. I mean, they have basically a movie amount of time to tie up all these loose ends.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's possible.
We did see last season that they had two episodes to wrap it up, and the second to last episode was a monumental waste of time.
All they did was
like, oh, we got to make the spores grow again so we can carry out the plan so we can in the next episode. So I was like, you wasted a whole episode on just like growing the spores because we killed them in the previous episode. It was just like,
I know, why? I agree. There's a lot of silliness that they could have just circumvented without even writing themselves into those corners. But I we'll see what happens. Honestly, we'll see where this all goes.
I mean, I hope they can pull it off amazingly. I just have so little faith in them for like how the season's been going, because it started off so strong and it's been a slippery slope since.
And the last thing I was going to just say about the Enterprise's bridge, because they got a quick shot of it real quick during the previews. It looks like a chain restaurant with all the red lighting. So I was like, what the fuck is that?
It's a redress of the Discovery's bridge.
Yeah.
All they did was like they built the middle console, they built the captain's chair, and then they just kind of redressed they took down some of the like other stand-up things inside Discovery. It's just a redress. I don't think they built a whole new set. I think they just built a couple pieces for it.
Right. Yeah. So that's basically, like I say, I did like this episode better than the last couple episodes. And, you know, I am excited to see how these last two episodes wrap up. It's been an interesting ride, but I'm not – I haven't been on, like, super psyched the last couple episodes. This is the first one that's getting me back into the saddle again. So, Holly,
so. Really, the only thing I have to say about this episode, I mean, there were a couple things that I wanted to say that I wasn't able to say when you did your recap. Like, for instance, when Pike was having his crystal vision and he saw him, like, legitimately melting, I don't think that the melting is actually a futuristic occurrence. I think that was part of the madness. But the only thing I really have to say about this episode is that I was suspect of Gant when he mentioned that he alone had time to get into a suit.
It
made me crazy that both Spock and Burnham fell for it. Like, I understand that in the moment when your life is at stake, you kind of just go with the flow. And most people would totally believe a story at a time like that, but I didn't feel convincing enough. Like, it was such a bad line. Like, oh, you know, we noticed control was taking over, so all the systems immediately ejected everyone out. But I had time to find a suit and, you know,
and get
keep myself
it.
Going. Like, no, he said, like, less than 8 seconds. Yeah. That doesn't make any goddamn sense.
He's the Flash.
And they should have realized that, especially Spock. And granted, he's young. He's still learning. Just, like, I don't know. That bothered me.
Yeah, but the only reason I gave it a pass is because Burnham knew him from the Shenzhou, and I think that there was an emotional connection, and so she was telling Spock, yeah, this guy's good, don't worry about
she
it.
She was compromised.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A couple other things. I jotted some stuff down, and some of them might not make sense because I was, like, trying to write it down as you guys were talking and still trying to listen to you guys, so I hope it all makes sense. Mm-hmm. It does kind of suck that you guys have seen so much of Star Trek that I don't know if you guys are able to really enjoy.
I know. Now we're like looking show. At it. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you guys are able to pick out all these missteps, and there's a word that I'm trying to think of. But basically, I'm sorry.
Yeah. It's basically like you're, like, let's say you're aficionado of some sort of, like, liquor. And even because somebody would normally just enjoy the liquor, because we're such aficionados, we're
yes, like, it's, yeah,
we're
you know
snobby
what?
Snobby about it.
You're so right. So the similar issue with me is, like, when I go to Chipotle, I've worked for Chipotle, I know what they're supposed to be. So I'm always judging. And I'm like, I'm not eating here. Or I'm like, wow, they really needed to salt their guacamole more. Like, mm-hmm. so I get it. But it really sucks that I am enjoying what I'm seeing. And you guys are like, this is wrong. This is wrong. This is wrong. This might be coming. I read this article and I wish you guys were able to enjoy it in a fresh pair of eyes. But I did type this out. Like I said, it might not make sense. So this was kind of a comment to David about the way that they're doing this series and how it's about just Michael and it's not really an ensemble cast and how they're trying to target the Game of Thrones audience. I think they are focusing on Michael because today's audience needs something to pin them down. An ensemble cast won't interest today's audience like it did before.
Game of Thrones is an ensemble cast.
Game of Thrones is an ensemble cast. I get that. But
and it's keeping people attached very well.
Game of Thrones is so out there and so many outlandish things happen, like the Red Wedding, that you're invested. Like, you are going to stay for a shitty episode and you're still going to come back for a shitty episode. I think for some reason with Star Trek Discovery, they're targeting people who've not seen Star Trek, which is stupid because they're ignoring their built-in audience.
Yes. Aaron and me, if they would not ignore us, like you were saying earlier, then we wouldn't have so much to complain about. Or if they would have put it in a different timeline, then there's nothing to complain about. But there's easy ways to not make us complain. New universe, do it right.
Exactly, but they're not focusing on the Trekkies. They need to force today's audience to invest in these characters, and that's partly why you had character. Such an issue with the lack of character development for Arium. To you, as a Trekkie, you expected a build-up, but they're banking on customers, viewers, whatever, investing in one character like Michael as opposed to the ensemble.
But no other shows just focus on one character except for superhero shows.
No, well, you're right. Even superhero shows, you have
other characters that are important. Even in Arrow, Felicity is a big character. Like the sidekicks are big characters. Like even in those shows, the side characters get more to do.
Yes.
This show is an anomaly. I don't think I've ever seen a show with such a laser focus.
Right. But think about today's culture where you could be completely invested in a show and you see a terrible episode or you see an episode about a character you don't like and you're like, yeah, well, I got Netflix. I've got 30 other shows I could be watching right now. I'm just going to start that. And then as soon as you see 3 episodes of that, you're hooked and you completely forget about Discovery. So like I get it for a financial standpoint. They're trying to get new customers, but that's stupid because they have a built-in fan base.
Yeah.
Trekkies are down. They want it. They want you to bring authentic material to the screen, to the books, to the comics, like everything. They want it all. And they're not served justice because they're trying to, you know, what is it? CBS is looking to aim it at this group of people who that they don't need.
But
they
in
don't
my,
need them.
They don't exist because you have to be a built-in fan to want to pay for Star Trek. They're catering to an audience that doesn't exist.
Yeah,
that's my big argument against anything CBS does is that, you know, we're paying for these services because we want to see Star Trek. You know, a kid off the street who, you know, might have watched Star Trek here and there is not going to invest that kind of money into CBS All Access because it's like, you know, I can watch it on Netflix or I'll watch something else, like you said, you know?
Yeah.
So it's really frustrating to me for that matter, just because we are their bread and butter and you're sort of just like, I don't really want you, you know, I don't really want your patronage. It's like, well, come on. Like who else is going to do that?
Who's willing to pay?
So that's the frustrating part, I think, for me. And yeah, like me and Dave,
I agree.
Watch Discovery, and we watch it, and we're like, we start nitpicking on things because this is kind of what we do. Unfortunately, we're critical on it, and there's times I want to just turn my brain off and enjoy it. And I honestly sometimes, Holly, like I'll watch the first time, and I'll try to just shut my brain off and just enjoy.
And then
it.
You get a line like, "I love science."
Yeah, and then I go,
"I like science," and you're fucking.
And my livid. Like,
and Aaron flips the table, throws a chair out the window.
I'm having like a capillaries exploding in my brain while
right,
that's happening.
Right.
I totally see it. It just frustrates me. So like I watched it the first time. And I try to just enjoy it as a roller coaster ride of a action sci-fi show. But then, you know, the second time I try to like watch it again, and then I try to like kind of get
in
into
an
the
analytical way.
Yeah, look at like what was this look like, or how did that, you know, how was that done or whatever. So yeah, I mean, that's where, and I think we're all that way. I mean, we watch it. So yeah, okay, I'll shut up.
No, you're good. I just, you know, those were just a couple of things that I wanted to touch back on while we discussed it, because there were things you guys said that I wanted to reply to, and I was like, I'll just fucking wait. And yeah, like I said earlier, this episode, I don't mean that it's not a good episode when I say it wasn't remarkable. I loved that bridge scene with the past, present, and future.
That was cool. That was a cool,
so cool.
Visualization of time.
Yeah, I loved seeing Laurel. I really actually did like Laurel and Ash's interaction because it wasn't romanticized. It wasn't, you know, there was no sexual tension. It was a lot of, not discussion. Thus, we, you know, because she is Klingon, and he doesn't identify as Klingon. I think mainly he identifies as human, and he struggles with that because he is Vok, and everyone sees Ash. So I think he's just accustomed to being seen as human, and that's what he identifies with. But anyway.
He's a cat dog. He chases himself.
Cat dog. Cat dog.
He identifies as a Ferengi.
The world is a little cat dog. What?
He identifies as a Ferengi.
A Ferengi. Oh, God. I didn't see that coming. but hey, if you're targeting today's audience and you want to identify as a Ferengi, I guess that's acceptable today.
That is acceptable.
But yeah, I
need it, Umox.
I love, you know, Pike. And I don't want to see his end, but it was a lot of anticipation with this season was, are we going to find out how he was, you know, disfigured? Right. And it was cool that they actually kind of showed us that's how he became disfigured. even though there's no timeline to know when it happens, but
I mean, it's probably just weeks before the events of the menagerie, because that's why Spock hijacks the Enterprise and goes and saves Pike from a life of sitting in a wheelchair, beeping at people.
Right. So I think it was a good episode, like I said, but there wasn't anything that really stood out that I was like, man, I got to talk about this week. Like, there really was nothing. So I hope that it's different next week. And hopefully the following week, because that would mean it would be the finale. So I don't know. I wasn't super impressed. Wasn't underwhelmed. It was just kind of like,
it was there. It was there.
There. Yeah. And maybe that's a problem with me. Maybe that's, I've come accustomed to it and I need to check myself. I don't know.
I agree in some ways.
It's interesting that you're just, it's like, it's kind of there. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at personally. And
I think we're a little spoiled, period, all of us. Like, I think you were saying, Holly, before, just culture is like, I can just, you know, turn on Netflix. I can go to, you know, Amazon Prime and I can watch something there, you know. There's always another show calling, you know.
Yeah.
So we are spoiled in that way, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it also means, but that spoiledness should mean that the writer should be competitive and like try to like beat out other shows as far as writing goes. And I don't know if they're really being that. But I thought it was interesting, Holly, that you brought up the time period on like when that happens to Pike and my answer to you. And I think, and people online have been bringing up how come Pike got stuck in a beeping chair and Arium got her whole body rebuilt? And maybe he just didn't have time to get to that point. Maybe the beeping chair is the first step to becoming robot person.
And we may not have seen that yet.
Well, the thing is, I'm assuming it just happened before, like as soon as Spock hears about what happened, Spock hijacks the Enterprise so he can take Pike to Talos. And they have the whole like court martial thing, or they're watching the events of the cage. So probably happened, because a lot of people are complaining how come he doesn't get the Arium treatment. And I'm like, well,
right.
If it's the interim, then if it's like the in between step while they're getting them ready for that surgery, maybe it's like super lengthy or whatever, and they just needed to get him mobile and beeping.
It could be so bad that they can't fix him, but honestly, I still stand like some people think that they deserve what they get. And I don't. So if we're going to psychoanalyze Pike is, he's a military man and he believes that he is doing the right thing and he has a code of honor. And honestly, if he gets it in his head that he deserves that fate,
or maybe then, that he would fall on his sword for his service.
Exactly. And he may 100% choose to remain that way because of that. And that is a real issue we have today. You know, I'm not saying we have the technology to fix, you know, all of our military members who are disabled veterans. We don't have the technology to fix them in a way that would allow them to live, what is it, unaccompanied, not unaccompanied,
unencumbered,
unassisted lives. You know, some of our veterans cannot do anything on their own. And for Pike being so dedicated to his job and so invested in the lives of the people around him, it may not be his top priority to undergo a surgery that fixes him or that allows people to see him the way society expects you to look. Mm-hmm. It just, you know, you don't know. That's a very
so
real
you're,
topic.
So you're today. Saying he's making a fashion statement?
No, I'm not.
That's exactly what you're saying.
Super insensitive, David. I'm talking about real things like PTSD and the military.
You're talking about Captain Pike and a chair that beeps.
Yes, I am.
I know what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
I know what you're saying.
I know. You're just trying to be funny. I get it.
I know. Trying. That's the key word.
Yes. Sorry. That was mean. But yeah, it's a real issue. And one of the things I love about Star Trek is they focus on real issues. And I think that if they play on that, it would be acceptable for Pike to remain that way as penance, or he felt he deserved that because, you know, a lot of military members, when they come home and their brothers don't, they don't understand why they're still alive, and they're so upset. They're very, very depressed about the fact that they survived and that their buddy didn't. Right. And instead of living their fullest life, they do dwell on these terrible things that have happened. And so I know I've said it before that he may want to wear that wound as penance. I don't know, but it wouldn't be abnormal for Star Trek to display a current event, a current issue that we have in today's society that's real. So I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if that's what they're going to decide to do. I just think that it would be realistic if they did it that way, even though it's in our future, you know, quote unquote, because this isn't, you know, it's not time. It's not a document. It's not a real life thing.
The future's unwritten.
It's unwritten. Yeah. So
I'm pretty sure people have written a lot about the future.
Hard on you. With the true future, it's all speculation. Everything that's written about the future is speculation.
That's what they want you to
think. Unless it's the Bible, and
then you gotta take it on faith.
Yes.
Hopefully.
But Star Trek is not a religion.
Not yet.
I mean, in Futurama it was. So, I mean,
it will
be one day, according to Futurama.
Oh, Futurama, you're right. They did turn into a religion.
Yeah.
I do love me some Futurama.
Good stuff.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. So now that we're past the depressing portion of today's episode.
Thank you for listening. See you later, guy.
Sorry. Live long and prosper.
We gotta do the real closeout.
I was
participating in my fake closeout. Yes, I appreciate it.
No, I was being inspirational because I was so depressing.
No, don't worry about it.
Climb higher, build higher.
We get depressing all the time.
Earthshaker.
Yes.
Lightbringer.
Well, yeah. Sorry. Go ahead.
That's an old episode reference. But all our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. Our intro is provided by Dave Wilkes. He likes to remain anonymous other than his name.
Yes, that's right.
Yes.
Hi, Dave.
Thanks, Dave. It's awesome. the show you can find online at centtheholics.com. You can email us at centtheholics@yahoo.com. You can join the Facebook group at facebook.com/group/centtheholics. Things you say there, maybe it get on the podcast like it did tonight in the case of Philip. Check out our YouTube channel, youtube.com/centtheholics. You can tweet at us. We're on Twitter. The show's at centtheholicduo. I'm at David_J_Duncan, Aaron's at Blackbird2004, and Holly's at Lunar Thistle, and she also has a website she's been working on.
You can visit my website if you so wish. at hollymichellev.wixsite.com/voiceover.
Definitely do that. And if you have some voice acting, if you want to read her, have her like voice act your novel or hit something else, yeah, let her know.
We'll work something out.
Yeah, very cool. And please go to Apple iTunes, write and review us there. Let people know by giving us 5 stars and a nice comment that you like the show. That's appreciated. As well as you could go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/synthaholics, and help fund our podcast. That would be wonderful if you could do that. And lastly, if you can, share the show, tweet it, send it on Facebook, or share it on Facebook or anything else that you might do, any other platforms, and or just tell your coworker, your family member, your best friend in the whole world about Synthaholics.
Yeah, whoever needs a new podcast, share the good news.
Share it, because it's a religion now.
We're at the Church of Synthaholics. Yeah, so Domine Dona.
I want to be more.
Requiem.
I want it more like I want it more like Temple of Doom.
Oh. Pull out people's hearts who don't agree with us. Kalima. All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Thank you, Aaron and Holly. It was great talking with you guys about this episode. It's been a while since we've been by ourselves.
Good fun.
Unattended. Without a chaperone.
Unchaperoned, yes. And I'm the only one drinking, so sorry about that, y'all.
No.
Damn.
We like it when you drink.
Don't be sorry.
Don't be sorry. This drinking is encouraged. I'm just trying to lose weight.
Yes.
I think we all.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
We did it, guys. We have a Synthaholics.
We did it.
We done did it.
Boop, 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 boop. I don't know what that was.
So Domine Dona Eis Requiem. Oh, that was a good bonk.
Well, I hit the stands in my microphone.
Oh, well, see, these are sound things sound professionals know.
Yeah, exactly.
We can make our own fun sound effects for our fun new intro that we're going to make.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm excited for this, though, by the way. This is the musical episode.
Yes, it is.
Music from Delirium.
We should do a musical episode. That'd be great.
Oh, that would be funny.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. Episode.
I agree.
We have to plan. I have to like know songs. Oh man, this is gonna be difficult.
We would make you know songs. We would. Yeah.
Yeah, you would have to listen to songs beforehand.
All right.